History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Area 45 with Bijani and Creighton.
8 o'clock hour, Area 45, 713-572-4610 if you'd like to call or text the program. 572-4610, Chris Santiago producing, Chris Partee in for Patrick Creighton tonight. I'm Sean Bijani. Have we decided we're going to check in on PC later on this evening, Chris, or not? Who's doing the ring announcing? By the way, are you on that? Have you recorded anything?
No, I actually haven't. I'm actually recording the game right now. So.
Oh, yeah. You have other important things.
He has duties. Yeah. He has stuff to do.
Yeah. I mean, it would be nice to check in on him a little bit later. He said he was going to call, but him saying he's going to call is far less likely to happen than us calling him and him answering the phone between fights.
Yeah.
I'll go ahead and check. No worries. I'll see what's going on.
Or we could play some old audio from his ring announcing from like a couple weeks ago.
It was good.
Yeah, it was good.
It was good, man.
It's funny. All right, so I guess I'll get to this here before we get to the Texans and stuff like that. I got some good audio for you to play. But I told you I had like an interesting question.
Yeah.
Like we were talking baseball during the break and, you know, from Scott Barzilla's conversation with us last segment. And you asked me a question like, hey, you know, what's a Hall of Fame player to you? And I'm kind of parsing through it. And I think you had the perfect answer. Like, there's no real general answer, you know.
It's tough.
It's very difficult to do. Like back in the day, you could be like, is he a member of the 400 home run club or 500 home run club, 3,000 hit club?
It's not that easy anymore.
1,500 RBIs or the batting average, years played, gold glove. So all that stuff, MVPs.
It feels like it's changed over time.
Yeah, I think it has. It, you know, to me, it was like, all right, well, how dominant was a player, you know, for the better part of a decade? You know, was it closer to 7 out of 10 years? I feel like maybe that is a little less now. Maybe is it, you know, half the time of a decade, 5 out of 10 years?
So you think 5 years of dominance? Let's say you play 15 years and you're dominant for the middle five, like from year 3 to 7, 3 to 8, whatever it is.
It's not cold and hard like
yeah,
that. There's
yeah.
not a fat, but I think that's a part of the equation. It's like, hey, you dominated your respective position in the sport or in that league for 50% of a decade, and you know you've got like the compilation, like your bottom line makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, did you play 15 years, and were you a starter for most of those, and did you compile like Hall of Fame worthy statistics?
Yeah.
It's just still very much a part of the equation. And you know, if you want a reference, frame of reference, Scott Barzilla's books, Hall of Fame Index Part 1 and 2.
You were kind of breaking it down for me, and that's what it sounds like.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he really goes in depth and gets in the weeds.
Oh, it's cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
He did a great job on those. Fascinating, fascinating reads. People will say that and not mean it. It's a fascinating read.
It sounds like it.
You should check him out. If you are a stat nerd, dork, and you enjoy baseball statistics and a little bit of background on some very historic players, guys that you know, Hall of Famers, guys that should be in the Hall of Fame, guys that are not in the Hall of Fame, that should not be in the Hall of Fame, guys that are in the Hall of Fame that should not be in the Hall of Fame.
But that in general was always a great conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
That is something that conversation can go on for hours.
But you know, the question that I was going to ask you, and I don't expect an answer because I myself don't even have one. It's just a wondering out loud type of a question.
Yeah, that's what we do here.
So, Hall of Famers, starters, guys that played every day. Compiled a lot of statistics.
I mean, you kind of have to be, don't you?
Okay.
For most of your career, I would say.
But, you know, it's maybe a wild thought, maybe dumb, but I'm thinking of a guy like Dennis Eckersley, right?
Okay.
Okay, he was a starting pitcher, and then he became a reliever, closer, you know, and compiled some great numbers, you know, just as a closer alone, right? And one of the greats, no doubt, not taking anything away
Definitely.
From him. But what about like your career, like role players, like your utility guys? Like, can you play long enough as a utility guy, an everyman, somebody that's Johnny on the spot, a la the Astros kind of Mauricio Dubon? I'm not making a case for Dubon by any stretch.
Just an example.
But as an example, like, hey, you need him to play second, you need him to play short, you need him to play left, right, whatever the case may be. anywhere but catcher and pitch. Dubon's the guy. Hell, he played first base the other night when Walker left the game after getting hit on the hand. But is there ever going to be like room for a dude like that that just almost forces the issue? Like they've gotten, you know, X amount of games at bats. Like the numbers are like, whoa, you know, this is crazy good for a guy that played sparing, like less than a starter would play. But it's like, boy, if he was a starter, this is what they project to be.
But here's the issue with that. That player you're talking about, if he puts up numbers that are just like, wow, eye-popping like that, eventually someone's going to pay him to be a starter.
Yeah, he's probably starting.
So he's not going to be that utility guy for more than maybe 2, 3, 4 years until he gets... And the team he's on may realize that and say, okay, we got to get this guy in the lineup every day.
And I think you're I think you're probably, you know, correct in
that'll
that
be
assessment.
Tough
and
to get one of those guys in like that.
History, you know, proves that out.
Yeah.
You know, I think, obviously. But it's just a thought by me. It's like, you know.
It's interesting, though. I like that question. But
I was trying to think, I guess, in my mind without, you know, having put the pieces together at the time. Now I have, like, what's the offensive version of a reliever?
Yeah.
Well, a guy that doesn't play every day. You need him when you need him. He's going to play and pitch when you need him. This guy's going to play and hit when you need him.
You said that kind of guy. An everyman.
Yeah, an everyman.
He can do a little bit of everything at multiple positions.
Super utility guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But again, if his numbers are that eye-popping, if he's hitting over 300 for, you know, multiple seasons and batting in runs and he's playing gold glove worthy ball at three different positions, eventually you're going to find a spot for him.
Yeah.
Every day. You have to. Mm-hmm. You almost have to find that spot for him. Because if you don't.
Yeah, if you don't, it's malpractice.
But someone else will.
Somebody else will.
So you have to find that spot for him.
No doubt. Yeah, and well, guys want to start. Guys want to play every
day.
Well,
that's where the money is, right?
Yeah. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
713-572-4610. 572-4610. Astros trail the Rays 1-0. Bottom five. One out. Nobody on. And now there's two outs because Yiner Diaz flew out to center field. The Houston Texans, should this piece of audio make you feel better about the Texans offensive line situation? This is a conversation on Sidelines with Sarah, a podcast featuring Devin McCourty and Chris Sims. They were talking about Texans offensive line coach Cole Popovich and how he, along with Nick Caley, are building the offensive line. Take a listen.
I think they're going to fix some of those offensive line pass protection issues. I have a hard time thinking, you know, between Nick Caley, Casario being there, a lot of New England people there.
Cole Popovich was a guy that was in New England who came in.
Right.
So Dante Scarnecchia, known around the NFL as one of the greatest
O-lines ever, O-line coaches ever.
Cole Popovich came in and was under Scar. So,
right.
Like, he was supposed to take over New England. The whole COVID vaccine stuff happened. Right. He was let go in New England. He bounced around D2, D3 for a year, then ended up in Houston as an assistant. He now, who was with Nick Caley, will take over. That offensive line will be built
will
in
be
a way
totally
that how
different.
Scar would build it.
Exactly.
Built off protection first,
right.
Play second.
Exactly.
Like, we're not going to have a play we love and say, but
we can't protect it.
They're not. You're
That's
not
what they did
that.
Last year. You go, that was a cool play, but he's sacked for an 8-yard loss. Yep. Who gives a shit if it was cool? And that's. I think that he's saying what I'm saying. They're going to get Stroud like Brady and be like, "Hey, 54 is the mic."
All right, you can cut it there, Chris. We let an S-bomb slip through, so he had to dump it. But it was a good conversation. You got the nuts and bolts of it, which was the most important part, and. I don't know, like when you dump, it should dump like at that point in time. I don't know if it like reverses back or whatever. I don't understand that crap.
No.
But the two main points was, hey, here Nick Caley in conjunction with Cole Popovich, the offensive line coach now, all right, both with New England ties and particularly with Cole Popovich, who learned and coached under, you know, one of the greatest offensive line coaches in the NFL in its history, Dante Scarnecchia, who was in New England forever. You're learning under that guy. Look at some of the other ties and connections that have been made with the Houston Texans. Not the Nick Caserio thing only. I mean, it takes a guy that understands the blueprint to kind of help put this all together.
Of course.
So, yes, credit him. But also the guy, Jake Andrews, who took first reps at center. in the first OTA practice session this week. New England guy.
Yeah, you were talking about that earlier. Yeah, from that first group.
Yeah, and I think, New England guy, New England ties, people that understand how this position group is coached. Some of the language maybe is the same, or at least based off of, you know, the same sort of fundamental script, if you will. And maybe, you know, Kaylee's going to put his own stamp on it. Whatever. Okay, the fact that there are ties there, good. Check that box. The fact that you're bringing something over from one of the best to ever do it in Dante Scarnecchia, boom, cool. Check that box. I think these are things that we obviously mention, like, whenever the Texans announced or the news broke that Cole Popovich was going to be the head offensive line coach, the conversation immediately was, okay, well, why? Like, they sucked last year, and he was very much a part of that situation.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there's always a story within the story, and right now, as we know it, we don't know the whole story, but we can assume that, you know, you connect the puzzle pieces. This guy's voice probably wasn't heard the way that it should have been. Maybe that D'Amico wishes it would have been in hindsight, and certainly not to the extent that it should have been, according to Cole Popovich. Okay, you can connect those dots. Let's let this guy cook, as I think one of our previous callers, Ernest, said. Let's let him cook, because he very much has learned from, you know, the best.
Some of the best in the game, yeah, yeah.
Let's see if he can find the personnel that fits the way that Dante Scarnecchia taught it in New England and worked for so many years. With Tom Brady, I get it, as a quarterback.
That's fine, I mean, but isn't that why he was brought in? Because of those ties and because of who he learned under for however many years?
Yeah, I don't think
that's part of the reason why he's brought in.
It shouldn't be a detractor. It shouldn't be like,
you have to let him cook.
Right, but I'm saying, like, well, yeah, they had Belichick and they had Brady. Like, okay, yeah, and? That should be a good thing. Like, you're taking, like, knowledge and, like, the playbook, essentially, for lack of a better term, from an organization that it worked best in.
For 20 years.
Why not, like, try some of that here?
For 20 years it worked.
At some point, yeah, for 20-plus years now, you've got maybe 2 years, 3 years total of, like, offensive line play that you were like, hey, this offensive line's badass, as opposed to, they're okay. Do you blame it on the quarterback? Do you blame it on the offensive line? Do you blame it on the coaches? Do you blame it on the running back? What do you blame it on? Do you blame on a crappy offensive scheme? Like, we've been through the whole gamut for 20-plus years of the Texans. It's one thing or the other. And yeah, why not try something that has actually worked for a long period of time? So I think there's that. I think the guys are attacking it from that angle. And in a sense, maybe people hearing that, you know, the naysayers are going to be like, well, come on, guys. Yeah, we knew this. Of course, the lineage is there. Of course, the experience is there. But it's the Texans. They're going to find a way to screw it up.
Well, I mean, there's always going to be naysayers. But going back to your question, yes, I believe fans, us included, you should feel good about this. You should definitely feel good about this move. And again, like you said, let him cook.
Yeah.
Get him in. He was brought in, again, in part because of the tree that he comes from under. I get that he had Bill Belichick. He had Tom Brady. That's fine. But he learned something. He had to learn something from these guys working there for, you know, however many years he was there. He had to have learned something.
Yeah.
Even just through osmosis, just being around them and seeing the process every day when he was there.
Yeah.
Come in. Let him try it out. Because what the last few years, it hasn't been working with offensive line.
Can you be worse?
It just hasn't.
Can you be worse than what? Can you be worse than worse? You know what I'm saying? Like,
it's hard.
It's a silly way, but I think in a lot of people think that it could get worse, because you point to one guy, Laremy Tunsil. Hey, man, he was the best of the bunch, and now he's gone. You traded him.
Yeah.
You know, what the hell are you guys thinking? That's the best left tackle or one of the best left tackles in the NFL. How do you expect to, you know, all of a sudden not just be better at left guard over, but what about left tackle? Who are you replacing Laremy Tunsil with? To me, it's not about that. To me, it's about, like, okay, if you can be the worst offensive line with the best left tackle in the league, then can you be a serviceable offensive line with other serviceable offensive linemen at their respective positions? Yeah. Like, can you grow the group by decreasing the talent level at one particular position or at two particular positions, or maybe asking a guy that was, one, drafted to play a certain position, paid as the fourth highest paid player at that particular position, and ask him to play another spot on the offensive line? Titus Howard, anybody? And to me, the answer is yes, if you got the coaching, if you've got the scheme and the people to execute that lesson plan, so to speak.
I think one thing that makes people hesitant to actually just, you know, do the blind faith thing is, for one, they're tired of the musical chairs on the offensive line. Mm-hmm. Just rotating guys, moving guys around, guys in and out. I get that. The other thing is, there are a lot of people, and I'm not just talking about fans, but analysts too, with people that play the game, that will tell you, in some instances or in some regards, the left tackle position is the most important position offensively, because we get it. Quarterback, you got to have the quarterback. But if you can't protect his blind side, it's going to be rough for you.
Yeah.
If you can't protect his blind side at a high level, it is going to be rough for you in a passing league
but
that we have now.
Can we just be logical here?
Like, I mean, we can, but
here's the thing. Let's have this little quick exercise. Elite quarterbacks, would you say there are fewer than five of those in the NFL?
3 to 5, yeah.
Okay.
Three to five, yeah.
If you've got an elite quarterback, chances are you probably got a really damn good left tackle, would you say?
For the most part.
But there are far more good, really good quarterbacks in the NFL than just five, right? Yeah. Could you go 12? Could you go maybe even 15? Like, guys that are really good. Maybe not like perennially really good, but had really good years where they were once upon a time, because it was a topical thing to do, as it is every single year. Are they a top five guy? Are they a top ten guy? How many guys that
never
are now,
ends,
you know, in the top 20 were once upon a time in the conversation for being a top five or a top 10 guy? Here's my point. You're not having those conversations if you're focused on the ass play of a left tackle for that guy on a particular team in an offense. So because all of a sudden you don't have one of the very best left tackles, doesn't mean that you're going to be worse on an offensive line or even at that position, you know, this upcoming season, just because that guy's not here. Maybe you're better collectively. And I told PC this the other day. How many sacks did Laremy Tunsil give up last season? Like one or two, right? One or two. Even if it was five.
Pretty damn good.
I can still make my point.
Not bad.
Let's just say he allowed three sacks last season. But man, he's all pro bowler, like did it again, badass, okay, cool. Never mind the false starts and the penalties and, you know, sketch run blocking, whatever, average, mediocre, whatever you want to couch it as. What if you got a guy in Cam Robinson or Ariante Ursary or Trent Brown, whoever the hell it is, might be all three of them by season's end. You never know with the way these guys get hurt. But what if collectively that group allows five sacks on C.J. Stroud, but you have decreased his overall sack number significantly, where it was like, I don't know, let's call it 52 last season. What if you brought it down to 38 this upcoming season? And what if your offensive points per game went up by 2 points? What if your win total went up by 1 point? But boy, you got worse at the left tackle. Okay, so what? We got cheaper. We got potentially younger, and we got better collectively on the offensive line. What's your gripe now?
I think people would be happy with that, but again, you mentioned something that also factors into the equation is false starts, penalties, because those will also kill you.
Yeah.
Even just
– and they have.
Forget the run blocking part, right? I mean, that's important too, don't get me wrong, but if we're just talking about the passing game, those penalties and those false starts, like all those penalties – once they start piling up, like we've seen,
sure,
they will kill you.
But that's also
they
the
will
sign,
hurt you.
That's also the sign of poor offensive line play, either be it from an individual or collectively. And last year, it was collectively. I mean, it would literally go like, you know, they're playing chopsticks on the piano. It was like, boom, Laremy Tunsil false start. Boom, Juice Scruggs false start. Boom, Titus Howard false start. Or whatever. Some kind of penalty on the
You're
offensive
shooting yourself
line.
Yourself in the foot repeatedly.
Just never mind Bobby Slowick, ass play caller last year at times. And now you got to deal with the offensive linemen, you know, having issues. Now you got to deal with like, okay, they all suck at run blocking. Now you got to deal with a tight end that is looking like he's not showing any effort. Now you got to deal with anybody else not named Nico Collins, can you catch a football? All of those things working together, somehow they won 10 games.
Yeah, they did. I mean, I think more than anything, folks want to see consistency.
Yeah. That's it.
Right now, we don't really know where the consistency is going to come from. Well, the offensive line in general, but at the left tackle position, because that had been Laremy Tunsil for, you know, a number of years. You don't know. We don't know. I think that's what scares people worries people.
Yeah, well, that's it. That's what worries folks. The first most logical fear that you would have about anything, especially in life, the fear of the unknown. You don't know any of these dudes.
Yeah.
You don't know Titus Howard anymore because you don't know where the hell they're going to play him. He was right guard the other day in the first practice at OTAs.
And come training camp, who knows where he'll be.
Exactly.
Consistently.
Exactly. He's Chris Partee, Sean Bajani, Chris Santiago, Area 45. Coming up next, we'll peek in at the Astros. Get you the other top stories throughout the day. It's Hot Leads coming up.
How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radnor, along with series co-creator and my friend Craig Thomas.
Follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
These are the new leads.
Now look, I need the leads.
These are the Glengarry leads.
Two lead cards for tonight, two lead cards for tomorrow.
Why give him the good leads?
He's got the leads.
He's got the leads.
He's got the good leads.
The whole thing is the leads.
They stole the Glengarry leads.
Let's talk about something important. Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
All right, time for Hot Leads, the day's top stories. We'll start with a score update from Daikin Park. Astros hosting the Tampa Bay Rays game 2 of a 4-game series. Framber Valdez and Ryan Pepperpot. How do you say his last name? Pepiot. Let's
Pepiot.
Go.
Pep?
Huh?
Pepiot. Pepiot.
Oh, wait.
Pepiot.
It's the I before Pepiot. The O.
Yeah.
Pepiot.
I don't know.
All right. Framber, after his second pitch of the ball game, left the yard. It was a home run from Caballero. Framber's been really good. Framber.
Yeah, he settled down pretty fast.
6 innings, 2 hits allowed, 1 earned run, no walks, 7 strikeouts. You talk about economical, bro. 53 pitches. That's 5-3. 53 pitches through 6 innings of work, and Framber's just now starting work in the top of the 7th with the Astros trailing 1-0. Houston.
Good Framber tonight.
Has amassed all of just 1 hit, and who would have thunk it? It has come off the bat of 1 Jake from Rake Farm Myers. Yeah. Dude, the lines below the lineup on the ESPN page, it says batting, team left on base, 1. Fielding, 1 double play. That's it for the Astros. That's it. Very anomalous looking.
It's been rough so far.
It has been very rough so far. Offense, where are you?
Well, you know, they like to hop back in late as far as to get the bats going.
If you've
they hop back in late. So
if you hung around with us from the drive, you heard best bets from Tyler Milner in their final segment of the show. I do believe he took the over for 1.5 total bases for Christian Walker tonight. Hmm. He's 0-2 with 2 strikeouts. Not looking very promising.
Not so far.
But the way the things work for the Astros is, hey, it's the 7th inning. The bats kind of start to come around. That's the way it's been here in the last few weeks. Maybe Christian Walker's the hero tonight. Maybe. I'm holding out hope. Hoping that Tyler makes a little money for himself and for the people tonight. So we'll see.
Yes. Tyler, make us some money, please.
But it is 1-0. Other Astro news, and all but of about, what, 3 weeks late, would you say?
A little bit.
Lance McCullers in the news today because, well, somebody did some reporting and found out that Lance McCullers has added 24-hour security to protect his family. You remember, I think it was about 3 weeks ago when he had that really poor outing. I think he lasted like an inning and 2/3 or something like that and gave up a bleep ton of runs and was just looking like, all right, Lance is never going to be Lance. His family received online death threats.
Crazy.
And that obviously was all that was talked about that day and the next day, and rightfully so. Well, Lance McCullers, being a normal human being, said, hey, we got to fix this. I need security. Here's the story. Jim Crane, Astros owner, stepped up and has provided and hired 24-hour security for him. along with his family.
Love it.
Since then. I don't know if that's still ongoing. The story's broken, but I can't imagine that it stopped. I know if I was Lance McCullers and the family, I would not want it to stop unless I knew I found this guy.
Well, that's the thing. Have they found this guy yet? I don't believe they have.
I've looked.
Or not that we've heard, at least.
I've looked, and I do not see.
Not that we've heard, no.
Yeah, and I know that was one of the first things out of their mouths. The reports was like, all right, they're looking for whoever did this. They're trying to find a way, see if they can track this guy's social back to.
So, I mean, I would have to
be able to do that.
You should be able to do that, find IPs, but you know, there's a lot of ways to kind of dodge that stuff.
Yeah, but there's one acronym that I know I'd be on the phone with.
Oh, yeah.
And that is the F, the B, definitely. And the I.
They kind of specialize in these things.
They have all the fun toys that can make that stuff happen.
They kind of specialize in this kind of thing.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
But no, I would have to think that if this idiot is still, you know, at large, for lack of a better term, that McCullers' family would still be more than likely still under 24-hour surveillance.
Yeah.
I would have to think that.
Man.
I would hope so.
I hope they get this person. I hope they get this person. Up next in Hot Leads, no NBA tonight.
No.
We've got a Game 6 Knicks-Pacers coming up on Saturday. I know you're a big basketball guy. Were you as shocked as I was to see the way that game played out last night? I expected this thing to go to 6, really. Well,
I said Pacers in 6 to begin with.
But not like that. I was not expecting a blowout in this series.
I was surprised. Yeah, I was surprised a little bit that the Pacers, they just never got into the flow of that game. They just never got anything going. I think what's his name?
Halliburton.
Halliburton. What did he score? 7 points. He had single digits.
I stopped.
He scored single
digits.
He scored single digits. I'll put it like that.
I stopped paying attention at the end of the third quarter, but yeah, he had about 7 or 8 points.
Yeah, he never got going. Just in general, but
you know what?
Those letdown games happen.
You know how many turnovers he had? 0.
Well, he had the same in that triple-double game,
I know.
Too.
I say that tongue-in-cheek because the first thing I saw on social media after the triple-double game, what was that, game 4, was 0 turnovers. It was an ESPN, like, you know, makeup.
Graphic, whatever. Yeah.
0 turnovers. No points, no rebounds, no assists.
They gave you nothing else,
They just said 0 turnovers.
They said 0 turnovers.
But I get what they were doing, I think, at the moment, because he made NBA history, playoff history, as becoming the first player ever to go 30, 15, and at least 10
with no turnovers. I mean, which is a big feat.
Yeah.
That's hard to do.
Well, it was hard to do that night, too, last night, because I think the Pacers ended up turning the ball over like 18 times.
He just didn't have one of them.
He had 0. So props to you, Tyrese Halliburton, their lone superstar. Who do you have? You got Pacers still in 6?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not wavering from that.
The Knicks are going to nick, right?
The Knicks are done.
All right.
They're done. I'm not wavering from that.
I love to hear you say that because it's going to make Patrick very miserable.
Sorry, PC.
Nah, don't be sorry.
I'm really not. I'm just being nice. Because I'm in his chair tonight. I'm just being nice.
You don't have to be nice. I'm going to tell you, he ain't nice to that chair. Let me tell you.
Oh, well, thanks. Thanks for letting me know that.
Coming up next. No. Zion Williamson, another NBA news.
Oh, goodness gracious.
You know what I'm about to say?
Oh, I know exactly what, but go ahead. Yeah, I saw it.
So Zion Williamson, the Pelicans forward, is in the news today, and it's not good. A woman has accused Williamson of rape in addition to, quote, sexual, physical, emotional, and financial abuse.
All of them.
I feel like I'm being abused financially, to be quite honest with you.
All the abuses.
They continue. Over the span of a multi-year relationship, according to a lawsuit submitted to the L.A. Superior Court yesterday, the woman, who is identified as Jane Doe, accuses Williamson of, quote, continuing pattern of abusive, controlling, and threatening behavior, end quote, over the course of a relationship that started during Williamson's freshman year at Duke.
Damn,
and lasted from 2018 to 2023. Zion Williamson has gone from one of the most potentially talked about traded players this offseason to ass. Are you on or off the bandwagon?
Definitely on the bandwagon. And just overall in general, he was supposed to be the next guy. He was supposed to be the next guy to carry the torch in the NBA as the next LeBron James. When he came out of Duke, he was supposed to be that guy, and it just has not gone that way. And I don't know what happened with this situation with him and this girl. hopefully he didn't do the things that she's saying that he did.
Yeah, yeah, right.
I don't want to see anyone abusing anyone in any type of situation, but he just can't stay out of these types of situations or similar with women. Like, for whatever reason.
Was he? I don't remember him being involved in anything like this before.
Well, he had the thing with the porn star not that long ago where where she had his business all out in the streets. It wasn't. She wasn't accusing him of SA or anything like that.
It was just a bad look.
It was just a horrible look.
Yeah, was that Mia Khalifa? That's like my go-to porn star.
No, it was, I forgot. I can't think of her name right now, but she was a porn star, and he just keeps ending up in drama.
Yeah.
That's unnecessary. A lot of these guys doing this, just like, bro.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Bad diet with food, bad diet with women.
Just 80. A lot of things.
Yeah.
Bad with Zion for whatever reason. I mean, yeah, it's just not.
And the financial abuse, too. I wonder what that's all about. All right, so we'll continue to follow that one. That'll be fun, I imagine.
Yeah.
One football note that I saw, the 49ers and Eagles are finalizing a trade. Both sides working to get a deal done with edge rusher Bryce Huff. The trade, which is expected to be finalized next week when the calendar turns to June, mm-hmm. includes a restructured contract, says reports, for Huff. Huff was slated to make about $16.75 million in fully guaranteed money this season, but the Eagles are going to take about $9 million of that in salary, leaving the Niners to handle the rest, which is close to $8 million once the deal is completed. So there you have that, stacking up edge rush talent. Now, when the deal goes through, upon landing in Frisco, Huff is going to be reunited with Robert Saleh, who used to coach him with the Jets when he was a head coach. Probably under far better circumstances now that Saleh
is no longer a head coach.
Is in San Francisco and doesn't have to deal with like all the crap with Aaron Rodgers and crappy ownership.
Yeah, well,
in New York.
He should be back, as far as Saleh goes. He should be back in a comfort zone.
Yeah.
Because he did very well. Obviously, he got the Jets head coaching job on the back of what he did as the defensive coordinator in San Francisco. So he's back in a comfort zone here.
Yeah. And now who's in the uncomfortable zone? Aaron Glenn. Because for whatever,
oh, goodness.
Whatever reason, he decided to take that Jets job, though far better now than Aaron Rodgers is not going to be a part of that situation.
Better, yes. But the thing about the NFL now is if you pass up head coaching jobs too many times, eventually they stop looking at you.
Hashtag Eric Bieniemy, maybe. I don't know if he passed him up versus they passed him up, but there's something going on there.
But I mean,
weird.
But even Ben Johnson with the Lions, I mean, now he's with.
Ben.
He passed up a couple cycles where he was waiting for the right job.
God bless America. Where is Ben Johnson right now? If you wouldn't have said that, then
Chicago.
Chicago, there we go. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's why everybody's all high on Chicago.
Yeah.
The Bears.
I mean, he does have a young quarterback, and then that's part of the equation there. He does have that.
Yeah.
Now, I still don't know.
Caleb Williams probably a far bigger fan of Ben Johnson than the Bears still, if you believe that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Pops, too.
I'm still not entirely sold on Caleb. I wasn't with him coming out of college. What I saw that last year at USC, I was like, okay, he was good, but not to the level where to meet up to the hype.
If he wouldn't have cried on his mother's bosom after that one game, would you have felt differently?
I got no problem with that. Okay, I mean, just asking. You know, I'm not judging it based off of that.
I'm just asking the questions.
Not judging it based off of that. Just what I've seen.
I would have. I would have felt better. And that.
You would have felt better.
Yeah.
If you hadn't seen him crying.
Yeah.
Now, is it that he's a football player or you don't want your quarterback crying?
I don't want my second baseman crying on their mommy's bosom.
let alone your quarterback.
I don't want you painting your nails. I don't want you crying on mommy's bosom. Just come on, man. Give me the days of
tell him to man up.
Yeah. Give me the days of my quarterback smoking the heater on the bench, you know, during a break in the third quarter. Like,
don't think you're going to see those days anymore.
Calling his mistress on the phone.
Now, you might see that. Yeah. You might see somebody calling a mistress on the bench.
On the celly now, not the hard line.
Exactly. No more. Nobody has a... Who has a land... Chris, have you ever had a landline? Like, in your own place.
Chris
like,
is going to say, what's that?
No.
He knows what a landline is.
No, I do, but...
Just checking.
I want to say yes.
Like, when you were really young?
Yeah, when I was young. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, guess what? Break. Coming up next... I did it for you, Chris. My bad, bro. I just looked at the clock. Coming up next, who is the most clutch player in the city of Houston right now? The most clutch player in Houston right now. We'll discuss next.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Karam Injury Lawyers Studios. Sports Radio 610 presents Area 45 with Bajani and Creighton.
Shout out to Viking Carpet One, the flooring outlet. Our guy Tony, make sure you go see him for any flooring need you may have. Carpet, hardwood, tile, whatever you need, they've got it for you. They'll take care of you. Just say, Tony, when you walk in the door, or give him a call, Viking Carpet One, the flooring outlet, and he's going to hook it up, man. Give you the best deal you can find anywhere in this city, basically. My guy, Tony. Viking Carpet One Flooring. Well, let's check in real quick on the Astros because it just dawned on me. We're in the eighth inning.
Yeah.
And it's 1-0. Astros are losing. Framber Valdez still on the mound. He's got 68 pitches to his name tonight. Like,
talk about efficiency.
If you had, if this was like, he could pitch 12 innings tonight right now at this rate.
And at this rate, they may need him to.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
They got to score.
Stranger things. I mean, it's more about pitch count than the innings.
But yeah.
Boy, the Astros have got to find a way to scratch a run across because Fromber's been awesome tonight. Since that first inning home run, literally on the second pitch of the ball game, he's been fantastic. It'd be just a damn shame.
It's like he hit a switch.
I did. Just struck out his ninth Tampa Bay Ray of the evening. 7 2/3, 2 hits, 1 run, 9 Ks, no walks. 70 pitches now for Framber Valdez. Fantastic. I say all that to say this. We'll have an H-Town postgame show for you coming up at some point in time tonight. Usually it's around like 9:40. I don't know.
At this rate.
Yeah. Maybe 9. Sooner. We'll see. Just screw up maybe everything. Sooner. But whatever. I asked the question, who do you think the most clutch player in the city of Houston is right now? Now, we can go through this and whittle it down to kind of get to that final answer. You got me thinking about this, Chris, because I guess it was an SI article that you saw in regards to the Houston Rockets, and they were talking about, like, their most clutch player.
Yeah.
And I hadn't read the article. You just brought it to my attention, and I was like, all right, this is an SI article one. They're asking the question, who the most clutch player this season is? That's two.
So you were already weary about
red
this.
Flag.
Yeah.
They're going to have some wild and wacky, you know, answer to this. Like, and God forbid they try and tell me it's Jalen Green.
Yeah, because when you asked me, okay, who did they say?
Yeah. I legit thought you might say, like, Fred VanVleet or an Amen Thompson. But rightfully so, it's Alperen Şengün.
Yeah.
Like, not best player, but the most clutch.
Yeah.
Okay, do they have stats to back this up? Like, do they have, like, reasoning behind, like, why they chose Alperen Şengün as the most clutch player? When I think of clutch this season for the Rockets, it's hard for me to come off of the game against the Boston Celtics. I know it's one game, but I thought, man, Amen Thompson was clutch that night. And it was Alperen Şengün, too. Amen had the, I think, the game-tying bucket, and then Alpi had the go-ahead bucket in the final few seconds earlier this regular season against the Celtics. That was in the midst of, like, their really great stretch of road games that they played really, really well, and they were at their peak at that point.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, this article was short. They didn't really have a lot of stats, just, and they really were talking about the clutch award that they brought in a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Steph Curry won it this year. So they were kind of talking about that in general as well.
Steph Curry's probably won it like every year.
Well, it's only two Most years years old.
Okay, only yeah, two they, years. They, he would have won it every year.
But then I asked you, and we can get to this later, but I asked you, could you ever, so you have the clutch award, you have a hustle award now. These are new awards that the NBA has brought in within the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And I asked you, could you ever see the NFL doing something like this with these ancillary awards? To me, I think they're kind of pointless, honestly. I think it's more of the participation trophy thing. Like, oh, let's give everybody something.
I mean, they have...
That's just me.
The NFL doesn't have it, but that's what the ESPYs are for, right? Like, don't the ESPYs, they go down the rabbit hole of, like, you know, best athlete, and they throw in, like, a quarterback with a gymnast and a soccer player and a, you know, cricket player. Probably not.
But that's like, but, for, you know, whatever. You see. Never know. But that's for all sports, though.
Yeah.
We're talking about one sport here adding extra awards to the mantle
with the NFL,
for some reason. Like, could you ever see the NFL doing something like this?
Does the NFL have, the NFL has a comeback player of the year award.
But they've had that for a long time. And that's usually a guy that comes back from an injury. I think the NBA may have it when it's warranted.
Now, all right, so, I mean, maybe, I was going to say, maybe I could see it, but I would far more like to see it than maybe I could see the NFL actually doing it.
So you like these awards.
I like the idea of it for maybe selfish reasons, but I think maybe people would agree with this in large. The NFL has MVP, Defensive Player of the Year, Offensive Player of the Year, Rookie of the Year, Comeback Player of the Year. That's NFL, like, sanctioned, like, for lack of a better term.
Those right are the now, main awards, right? Yeah, the main ones, I believe.
But I like college because they do Offensive Lineman of the Year. They do best running back. Then they got the Heisman, you know, best player. They don't do, well, they do have best quarterback. And they whittle it down, like, by position groups, right?
But then also think about, what are there, 130-something, like, Division I college programs?
Fair, but there's a bleep ton of NFL football players.
True.
That maybe the average fan of a local team doesn't know about, and maybe for that matter doesn't care about. But I would like it because, for me personally, I love the NFL.
Yeah.
I don't have time to keep up with all of this stuff, like, you know, some people do.
Yeah.
Even though, yeah, it's, you know, partly my job, and I stress partly my job. But I think it would be cool by the NFL because it would bring more attention to particular, not just the winner of said award. So it wouldn't just bring attention to the winner of, hey, best running back, or here's, you know, the who had the best hustle play. Now, they wouldn't do that. That's the ESPYs. But, you know, best running back, best offensive lineman, best defensive lineman, best safety, best corner, best secondary player, best linebacker, best passer, whatever. If they did that, it would bring attention to a group of players that are in the conversation for being deserving to win said award. That's what I would like because...
Isn't that what, like, first team all pro, second team all pro? You want the best quarterback, then the for, like, first team all pro receiver, you may have one or two, you know, the guys on the outside.
Maybe just answer that question.
Isn't that kind of the same thing?
Yeah, maybe you just.
So you don't really need, because the NBA also has all NBA. They have three all NBA teams for offense.
So you're
and then they have two for defense.
NBA's kind of overkill then with the.
That's what I'm saying. All these extra awards, it's just, it feels like more participation trophy crap. But that's just me personally. That's what it feels like.
Do they have a TV show for All Pro in the NFL?
Not specifically. I think they just kind of announce it.
Do you remember back in the day, they would have a television show for, like, all American football players?
Yeah.
And they would bring these guys out, like, the president of the United States would be there, and they'd bring these players out, and they'd get to shake the hands of all these important people. You know, I want to say that they used to have something like that for, like, Pro Bowl, but I could be totally wrong on that. But if you did this,
they,
like,
may have done it at different times.
The highest, you know, honor or recognition in the NFL for a particular player, would that not be all pro? And why wouldn't you dress that up even more than what they do? Like, and that would effectively do what I'm saying I'd like to see happen. Like, celebrate more players. Like, put those guys out there, market them. You know?
But see, that's my point. They already kind of have that. Right? And the NBA does too. Which is, you know, what I'm trying to say is I don't feel these extra awards are necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you know who won the Hustle Award this year in the NBA? You'll love this. Draymond Green. Exactly. I knew you wouldn't like that.
Yeah,
exactly. That's what I'm saying. I like Draymond Green. I don't have a problem with him, but that's what I'm saying. Like, all these extra awards, I just think it's too much. It's overkill. You already have all NBA. You have all defense. You have the rookie team. What more do you need to give the... Everyone doesn't need to be recognized as, okay, the best. Everybody can't be the best. That's why it's called the best.
Yeah, no, you're right. I, I'd like to maybe see the NFL dress up like those all pros, maybe a little bit more.
Okay, if you want to make it an actual like ceremony and do a show,
that's fine. They put a tweet out and a statement out, and you know, like,
that's fine.
They do that. I think maybe they do.
No,
more.
They do.
Maybe
they do.
I'm wrong.
They announce it, but I mean,
I don't need
it's not like a huge deal.
I don't.
All the time.
I don't personally need the TV show. I think it'd be kind of cool if they had like you know, maybe an hour-long program or something for that that would celebrate that season for these guys.
Yeah.
You know, I think it'd be cool. 713-572-4610. That was a good little sidebar by you.
Yeah.
Going back to the main question, who's the most clutch player in the city of Houston? We've got some reaction. We'll get to it next. It's Area 45. Stay put.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free, so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.